If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Roberts, and as always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Roberts. And back in Stark Vegas, back in the building, had a great time in San Antonio. I tell you, if you never visited San Antonio, a little traveling tip for you, it's a great place to visit. There are a lot of places, you know, kind of major cities, you hear about them, and you get there, and they're, you know, downtown area is kind of in a state of decay, and you're like, oh, it's kind of dangerous around here. I never, ever at any point in San Antonio felt a little bit uncomfortable. I rarely ever feel uncomfortable visiting places, but they have done a great job in the downtown area of San Antonio. Now, we stayed right off the Riverwalk, had dinner two nights at a couple local restaurants. You know, when I travel, I like to eat local. I like to support small business. As a small business person myself, it's a big part of things. But yeah, when I travel, I want to eat local cuisine. I don't want to go, listen, I love Cracker Barrel. I do, I love it. I'm not going all the way to San Antonio, Texas to eat at Applebee's or Cracker Barrel or Chili's or Denny's or McDonald's. Not going to do it. You owe it to yourself to get out and enjoy a little something you can't get close to home. I know some people out there, it's like, hey, Steve, I trust the national chains. There is a consistency, and I understand that. But I am, I guess, a little more adventurous than most. I like to go and eat at local places. It's what I do. It's true. And sometimes when I travel, too, if I've got time and effort and, you know, spending the night somewhere, I even go to a local record store and support them, too. But great time. Again, the Riverwalk is fabulous. If you've never been down there, you owe it to yourself. And we stayed in the Marriott right there off of the Riverwalk, and so it made it really easy. I mean, we Ubered from the airport to the hotel and then Ubered from the hotel back to the airport. That's the only only traveling we did other than what we did on foot. It was great. Great time. Also, I went to the Alamo. Learned a lot at the Alamo. Got our picture taken at the Alamo. And I don't just mean their picture. We had somebody else take it. You know, like it was a couple there. Hey, I'll take your picture. You take ours. You know the whole exchange of goods and services? When you need a price, what's pick? Instead of getting a selfie, you find some passerby, and hopefully they won't steal your phone. But that's how it was. And I tell you, there is no basement in the Alamo, and some of you young bucks will need your parents to explain the reference. There is no basement in the Alamo. I was going to try to help Pee-wee out, but it's true. His big adventure ended in disappointment as he traveled to the Alamo. I didn't meet Large Marge or anybody like that along the way, but it was great. And one of the things that I learned at the Alamo, number one, you know, the picture we see of the church, the chapel, is not just the Alamo. There's a lot more to it. And they have invested so much money into restoration there. I mean, the building itself, for the most part, is still, you know, existing construction. They've modified some things a little bit, but I like it a lot. But one of the things I learned, and maybe you didn't know this, I didn't, so I don't know how you would know. Maybe you're smarter than me. But nevertheless, did you know that Phil Collins, yes, Phil Collins, the Phil Collins, of Genesis, of course, of 80s pop fame, is considered to be the world's greatest collector of Alamo artifacts and memorabilia. Were you aware of that? I was not. And about 10 years ago, Phil Collins donated his collection. He grew up and was fascinated by the Disney book collection about Davy Crockett. Davy was his hero. And so, of course, when he achieved something in life, he began to kind of collect these artifacts. Last year, if you've been to the Alamo before, maybe you don't know this, but last year, they opened the exhibit which has all of these artifacts. Pretty amazing stuff. They also have an incredible model in the back end of the facility. And Phil Collins narrates kind of the Battle of the Alamo, like the end of the siege and stuff like that. He kind of explains it in a great detail. And it's all set up, and they've got like this movie projector, and it kind of highlights different areas on the model as he's talking about different things. It's well worth your time to go. I mentioned to Dana, I said, you know what? I'm so inspired. We should construct a model of Duty Noble Field and put in our living room. Since we're empty nesters, we can do whatever we want. I don't think she's on board. I may do it anyway, right? She's never here. She's always up at the spa. I may do it. I might do it. I'm going to think about this, right? Hey, before we get too deep in the show, I want to offer my congratulations to a pair of Mississippi State Olympians that have done some pretty major things. Now, you may have heard yesterday, Marco Arap of Canada, a Mississippi State 800 meter specialist, not only did he have one of the best days he's ever had in a track and field event, he set a new Canadian national record and turned in the fourth best time ever in the history of the world in the 800 meters. And it was a photo finish. He nearly won a gold medal. And this is a bulldog, guys. Let's get excited about this. Nearly walked down the gold medalist. And, of course, it was a photo finish and gets a silver medal. He did have this to say down the stretch. It wasn't the first time that we've had a finish like that. I knew Juan Yanoi was going to have a good last 10 meters. I was just trying to match him. Had a great night. We've been fighting for this day all year long. We thought we timed it just right. I just couldn't be happy with the way I performed. I've got a huge lifetime best in the silver medal. I can't be upset. Absolutely. How wonderful is that? Absolutely amazing. And just the day before, and we were in San Antonio, and we have had a chance to meet this gentleman. Anderson Peters won an Olympic bronze medal in the javelin with an 88.54 meter throw. Pretty impressive. It is our first ever medal in a field event and first Olympic medal since 2000. And so we've got a couple of Bulldog Olympians we can be very proud of, and we are. And you know, we don't provide a lot of coverage of track and field. I don't know if you guys, honestly, kind of keep up with it, except when it's the Olympics. And I do love the Olympics. I do. I remember buying those Wheaties boxes. That was always the big thing, right, is once the Olympics concluded, who was going to be on the Wheaties box after the Olympics. Remember Mary Lou Retton? Remember that? Yeah, it was exciting. Carrie Strug. Simone Biles, of course, not connected to Mississippi State, but how incredible is that story with her, man? It's amazing. There's a documentary out there on Netflix. So I love it. I know, listen, there are a lot of people out there that are, you know, it's like we want to get upset about everything. Here's the thing that I think about. There are a lot of people out there that are involved with things that are not positive, shall we say. And there are a lot of people out there that are going to, you know, use their own platform to further an agenda or to be offensive to other people. I get that. I don't agree with it, but I get it. That's got nothing to do with those student athletes. Nothing. Nothing to do with them. I believe that everybody should be judged based upon their own merit, their own actions, their own conduct. And so, no, I'm not going to boycott the Olympics and boycott our Mississippi State athletes because of some idiot. Not going to do it. I'm going to support our people because they are representing us. They're representing their home countries. And we are very glad and very fortunate to have shared the journey with them for a little while as they represent dear old state. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I actually had lunch today again at Harvey's. Yeah, had a burger from Harvey's. Yeah, that's what I did. It was just convenient for me. But I'll be honest with you, when I, the first time that I started craving a hamburger, I started thinking, you know what, I really want a hamburger. I think Bulldog Burger Company. That's what I do. The variety there, You know what I'm saying? It's like I can go in there, and it's not just a hamburger. It is a symphony of the senses, right? I do like the new Outback Burger, and if you need to try that too, excuse me, the Comeback Burger. Pardon me, the Comeback Burger. It is only available for a limited time. It's a winner, though. I think it should be added to the menu full time. That's my vote. Nobody asked me, but I'm going to volunteer that because there are a lot of people these days that comment on things they don't have any control over. But here we are. Nevertheless, I love Bulldog Burger Company. And I love being able to go in there and try new things. The classics are the classics, right? The Freshman 15, the Bulldog, the Pimentology, add bacon. It'll put hair on your chest. It will. All those, listen, those are great. I know that I can always go in there and have some consistency. But I love it when they add something new. Because I love the classics so much, I'm thinking, hey, you know, I lived my whole life, you know, as a young person, you know, with Led Zeppelin 4. Right? I live with Queen the Game, Styx, Rockin' the Paradise. And next thing you know, all of a sudden I got Bark at the Moon. Then I got Shout at the Devil from Motley Crue. And then I got Appetite for Destruction. So you never know when a new classic may emerge. I think this Comeback Burger has some staying power. Let's go ahead and liken it to Welcome to the Jungle. How about that? You weren't expecting that today. Who knew that we could work in 80s metal with hamburgers? And if that job is available, I'm your guy, right? I absolutely love the Comeback Burger. You know, if I didn't, I just wouldn't talk about it. I would just read another ad and just say, hey, go to Bulldog Burger Company. Things are great. They are. But I'm telling you, you don't want to miss out on the Comeback Burger. And it's moving weekend here at Mississippi State. So there are a lot of people in there partaking of the great cuisine that is only available at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And you know those days that maybe you're like, you know, I don't know that I need a full meal. Maybe just get that. Maybe just get the spring rolls because, I mean, quite frankly, we need you guys to be looking your best this football season. We do. So let's make a run to Bulldog Burger Company and take care of those spring rolls as part of our beauty care regimen. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Back in the building, as we discussed, I was at football this morning, and that's one of the things, too. It takes me a little while. You get through football and got to go upload the videos, come back and peruse through the message boards and things like that. Now, tomorrow, we will have our first scrimmage. It will be close to the media, but we will get a chance to speak to Coach Jeff Lebby once it's over. One of the questions that I want to ask, too, is, you know, about health. I mean, I know he's not going to say a lot about injuries, but I just would like your progress reports. Hey, Coach, how healthy are we at this point in camp? You know, that kind of stuff. And I know that he'll be guarded about certain things, but, you know, I'm always concerned about that. Football is a very physical game. Guys get banged up. Guys get hurt. And as we've seen in fall camp, sometimes guys get banged up and are out for a while. The good thing is I believe we have some depth. Now, we talked a little bit about secondary the other day. Now, what I want to talk about today is the offensive line. As I travel and encounter Bulldog fans, I take note of what you guys, the questions you guys are asking me. And had a chance to meet some Bulldogs and some Boneyard listeners, and I wish I remembered everybody's name so I could shout you out on the show. But it seemed like every airport that I stopped in, people either knew who I was or thought I was a member of Korn. Either way, there were some interesting visits. Had a chance to visit with a couple Bulldogs yesterday in Atlanta on our way back to Jackson. And you know, thanks so much for stopping to say hello. It means a lot. It does. But one of the questions that a lot of people ask me is, Steve, how do you feel about this offensive line? It is going to be a completely new group in many respects this year. I think everybody knows that. That's part of the deal. We knew that we needed to hit the portal hard. Everybody understood it. And to be honest with you, you know, until we see this group on the field, you don't really know what you have. That's why I'm curious to hear what Jeff Lebby has to say tomorrow about protections and things of that nature. But there has been a lot of chatter in our media opportunities and then kind of behind the scenes a little bit about this group is performing well. And I think a lot of our fans are going to really need, you're probably going to need to invest in a program this year. You know, a lot of people don't necessarily follow recruiting, so they don't fully understand, you know, who the guys are and kind of what we have. You know, it's all part of the deal. But I think it's pretty safe to say who our starting five are going to be. I don't know if we know exactly where everybody is going to line up. Those are the things that I think that probably camp will flesh out for us. Like, we had Marlon and Martinez today. Matter of fact, all three players that were made available on Saturday, we've already got those stories up. And you can go check them out, all three of them. You can watch the videos. You don't have to be a subscriber of Gene's page. You should be, but you don't have to be to view that content. Those stories, any of the big room stuff, those stories and those videos available for free at jeanspage.com. We don't make any of that stuff VIP. Not the stuff that's in, you know, not the stuff that's available to everybody. You know, I mean, come on. All right, so I'm going to run through this roster just a little bit. I'm going to highlight some names and kind of share with you some things that I've learned. Okay, Grant Jackson. You remember Grant. He signed out of West Lincoln High School. He was a Joe Moorhead recruit. Marcus Johnson, of course, recruited him. He was so funny. You know, called him sometimes, and he'd be out there feeding the cattle or, you know, taking a fish off the line. Grant is a country boy, and he's a senior now, and he hadn't played a whole lot. But there's a lot of chatter about him this year. And you say, you know, Steve, it's been a while, you know. Yeah, it has been. But it appears that Cody Kennedy is kind of getting it out of him. We've always known that Grant Jackson was a guy that had a lot of ability. But he is primarily been a reserve guy. And I think he'll be a reserve guy here too. But I think that there's a way for him to kind of get in the rotation. I mean, you'd like to have, you think about your five, you probably have like eight or nine guys kind of ready to go for SEC play. I think he's going to be one of those guys. But yeah, he's appeared in 40 games, and mainly on special teams. He was a part of the field goal unit and that kind of stuff. But I think that you're going to see him maybe get more reps on the offensive line itself. And, you know, that's what the non-conference is for, right? Figure out who you can count on. Because you never know when somebody may go down, right? You can't just say, hey, Grant, you're just going to be part of special teams. You're going to be on punt block, or you're going to be on the, you know, kicking regimen type stuff. You got to get him ready. I think he's a guard all the way, even though he's 6'6". But this is a guy, too. Again, there's a lot of chatter about him. We had a chance to talk to him back in the spring. I'm sure we will before fall is over. But, guys, he has appeared, you know, over the course of three seasons. I mean, since that redshirt year. And I guess, technically, when you start working through this, you know, the 2020 year didn't count, you know. So, you had 2021, 2022, 2023. But, he's a guy that's done some stuff for us. And it's taken a while, and that's the thing about kind of small-town offensive linemen. I'm not being critical. We've kind of built a program on small-town players. But Grant Jackson's one of those guys, and maybe it's taken a little bit longer than we anticipated. I think that's probably fair to say. But a lot of these guys that come from small-town Mississippi or small-town Alabama or Louisiana, you know, when you're 6'6", and nearly 300 pounds playing at West Lincoln High School, you are not going to encounter anybody your size until you get to college. It's just not going to happen. Not at that classification. And listen, these kids can't determine where they live, right? But look for Grant this year to be a bigger part of things. I don't think he starts, but I do think he is a guy that you...
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Guys can get excited about it. You know, Malik Ellis last year, you know, we wanted the more athletic guys on the team. You know, we worked him some at tight end. He's kind of back where he belongs now. I think he's probably a second teamer. But I think he's a guy, too, that, you know, we've always known how talented he was. And maybe he worked some at guard, you know, 6'5", 285. Probably a year away. You know, that's the thing, too. Like, last year, out of necessity, he played at tight end. He was a blocking tight end. And I thought, well, maybe that'll aid in his development. When he's attached tight end, he can slot over and play tackle. Cody Kennedy, I think, sees it a little bit differently. This guy's a great athlete, one of the great commitments in that class, and just a sophomore. You know, so we got time for the light to come on. Leon Bell, we know we have a tackle in him. And I think it's a guy, and maybe this year, you know, maybe this year he's one of those guys that, you know, maybe plays later in ball games to kind of save some wear and tear on the starters. But I think he's a starter next year. I think the portal guys this year, along with Albert Reese, will be your starting five, but I think Leon Bell might be your third tackle. I think everybody probably sees it that way. And we'll see how it progresses. All right, we have McCaelin Pounders last week. I love Big Mac. Listen, a lot of our fans were upset when we started recruiting him again out of the portal. People are like, you know, Steve, hey, you know, he stabbed us in the back and all that kind of stuff. Guys, let me tell you this. This young man was part of a PR shell game instituted by the University of Mississippi in an effort to make Mike Leach look bad. And I'll be honest with you guys. When all this crazy stuff happened, I was a proponent for, you know, hey, let's take him back and be the hero. We'll get some good PR. But if McCaelin Pounders was good enough for us to commit the first time, when all this craziness happened with Ole Miss, we should have come back and said, you know what, just bring him back. But I think some egos got involved, and I'm not being critical of anybody because you got to understand the human element of this. I think there were some people who were like, hey, I don't know if I can trust this kid. And I think McCaelin Pounders is probably the guy that the next time that you bring official visitors into camp and on the campus and a kid's deciding between State and Ole Miss, I'm having McCaelin Pounders host them. Because he's seen Ole Miss at its worst. And us some Ole Miss fans listen to that. Well, Steve, that's not really true. No, it's absolutely true. I've seen the text messages. And was going to write a story about it, but somebody close to McCaelin Pounders just said, hey, let's just kind of let it go. And so we did. We respected the wishes of those close to McCaelin Pounders because we didn't want Mac to, you know, because what if, you know, eventually down the road, Mac decides, hey, I'm going to go on the portal and you don't want to burn bridges, right? Even though that one was burned by the other side. But, yeah, we expect Mac Pounders to be a starting tackle, and I think that's pretty safe to say at this point. And he looks to me like he's trimmed up a little bit, and maybe it's just kind of firming up a little bit. But this is a guy that's played a ton of snaps. PFF ranks him really high as far as a pass protector. You know, we're going to be running the football a little bit more this year, so it would be interesting to see how many times we kind of run behind him, but I think it's pretty safe to say he'll be one of your starting five. Ethan Miner, everybody you talk to talks so well of Ethan, and we had an interview with him last week, and he was a lot of fun. This is a guy that's already married, very mature, a guy that's a believer, a native of West Hartford, Connecticut. This is his third school, too. But the guys all seem to kind of gravitate to him. And I think, again, having that veteran presence, a guy that's kind of seen it all, done it all, we talk about, you know, Pro Football Focus, they rated him, I believe, the number two center in the country last year in efficiency. And now he's here. Obviously, he had a relationship with John Cooper, a guy that's played in the National Football League. So John Cooper knows what big-time players look like. And I understand that Ethan Miner is not the prototypical size for an SEC center at 6'2", 305 pounds. But when you consider the amount of snaps under his belt and the fact that he was kind of lured here by a guy that's played in the bigs, you know, that's the thing you start shaking through there. John Cooper would not have brought Ethan Miner, would not have, when he went in the portal, would not have recruited him here if he didn't believe he could play here. And now that he's been here for a while, there's a lot of chatter about, hey, Ethan Miner is kind of our leader up front. Expecting some big things from him. for sure. Jacoby Jackson, we haven't heard as much about him. I hope we get a chance to interview him soon. But Jacoby Jackson, 6'6", 320-pound, kind of profiles as a guard. And maybe that's your left guard. You know, we'll kind of see how things play out there. You know, we'll see. But Jacoby Jackson's a real dude. This is a guy that has played a ton of snaps in the Power Five. This isn't a guy that comes to us from Texas State. This is a guy that was at Texas Tech. He is a redshirt junior, so you've got the possibility of retaining him for 2 years if things go well. You know, of course, if things go really well, perhaps he turns pro. You know, part of the deal. But made 8 starts last year at Texas Tech, played in 13 games. Pro Football Focus had him at a 78.6 in their pass blocking efficiency numbers. But did not allow a sack last year. 515 snaps at left guard. He only committed 3 penalties in nearly 600 snaps. It's a veteran guy. And again, a guy that's played in the Power Five. You know, not just a guy that's like got to get up here and get acclimated to the speed of the game. I mean, they run tempo in the Big 12. They got some legit pass rushers in the Big 12. And again, I think sometimes because, you know, the story of McCaelin Pounders and, of course, Ethan Miner rating as high as he did, I think sometimes Jacoby Jackson's kind of a forgotten guy. But he's going to be a big part of things for us. Albert Reese drives a big pickup truck with a personalized tag, 6'7", 330. People forget, you know, we beat Ole Miss for him at the very end. A lot of people, Ole Miss were projecting him to go there, comes here. It was a great get for Mason Miller. It's taken some time for him to kind of acclimate. But this is a massive individual at 6'7", 330 pounds. Like, if you were going to do a creative player, offensive lineman, it's going to look pretty close to this. Expected to play one of your tackle spots. You know, had to kind of get up to speed on what it's like to play college football, and everybody does. But when you start looking through this thing with him last year, I mean, he played in 12 games last year. 133 snaps. 79 of them on the offensive line, 54 on special teams. In the time that he was there, he did not allow a sack. Did a really good job against LSU. So I think when you start thinking about, you know, hey, the pieces you got coming back and what you've got coming in, you start thinking, hey, you know, we've got some time for these younger guys to develop. Because how many times have you seen a first-year coach come to Mississippi State and is like, hey, we're already playing for next year. So we're going to play the young guys, right? The portal kind of changes your construct when it comes to your roster. But Marlon Martinez, another guy too from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, out of LSU. Had him today. Very, very outgoing guy. Really like him a lot. 45 games at LSU. Started 4 games. He's in graduate school here at Mississippi State. Played in 12 games in 2023 at LSU. Pretty impressive, but largely a reserve. But he will have the opportunity to start here. He said today, listen, I got no ill feelings towards LSU. Still talk to my friends down there. Kind of glad we don't play them, he said, because I don't want to have to listen to the trash talk from the defensive lineman down there. But, yeah, I think when you kind of work through what we've brought in, you know, a lot of people say, you know what, Steve, what's the deal with the offensive line? And it's one of those things, too. Everybody understands that's where it all starts. But it's like, hey, we don't have many returners. And that's true. You know, but you do guys like Cannon Boone who have been here for a while. A guy we flipped from Virginia Tech late here a couple of years ago. Great win for Mason Miller. And Jackson LeHue, that's another guy, too. You know, guys that we're excited about. But when you go get these portal guys, it kind of basically puts you where you should be, you know, with a bunch of veteran guys. And again, you know, Ethan Miner comes to you from North Texas, McCaelin Pounders from Memphis, and you, Jacoby from Texas Tech, and Marlon from LSU. You know, so it's not like these guys are going to need a ramp up, right? They already have played against the speed of the Power Five or Four or whatever you want to call it these days. Now it's about kind of molding this group into a team, and that's the thing that we've heard, you know, from talking to the players, that Cody Kennedy has done some things with them kind of away from the field to help kind of build those bonds. And Marlon talked about that kind of extensively today. He goes, you know, we get together. We hang out off the field. you know, we go fishing or whatever, or we go, you know, skeet shooting, whatever. You know, we do some things away from the field to help build a brotherhood. And that's how you build an esprit de corps, right? You get out there and you get guys that understand that, hey, we're ball players first, but we got to be brothers. You know, I got to be able to trust the guy next to me. I got to make sure that this guy understands, you know, kind of what I'm expected to do, and that I've got his back and he's got mine. And so I like what Cody Kennedy has done in the portal. We said last year, probably the only coach that came anywhere close to what Chad Bumpus did in the portal last year was Cody Kennedy. And when you think about what we needed to do on the offensive side of the football, it's a great thing that we did kind of turn some groups over. So this is an offensive line group that I think is going to be ready to play come day one. Got to stay healthy. We do. We got some young guys behind them with some ability. But there, you know, there's a gap with experience. And there's probably a gap just overall talent at this point, just because of the fact that, you know, we're bringing in guys that were pretty highly recruited looking for a career reset for one reason or another. But I think this offensive line group is going to be a portal success story. And we look at the wide receivers and you say, you know what, this group's probably got the most potential of anybody on the roster right now. You know, with the new offensive system, and Bump kind of having a year under his belt as the coach at Mississippi State. We know what we think. We know who Bump is. You know, we know what he was about. We knew the kind of player he was. I mean, listen, the guy didn't go up there and win a Pac-12 championship at Utah by luck, right? And it was a big deal to get him to come home. They certainly wanted him to stay. So now he's here at his alma mater, a place that we all love. And you don't think he's probably working even harder? If you know anything about Bump, he gives everything he's got. But being back home and his son having an opportunity to be close to his mother, to his grandmother, that's pretty significant. It is. So Chad Bumpus, you know as well as I do, Chad's going to do everything he can to stay here until the time comes for him to accept the promotion somewhere else. There's probably not a coach anywhere, probably given as much as Chad is. Because Chad knows what it takes to win at a high level here at Mississippi State. I think Cody Kennedy understands that too, even though he's not a Bulldog alum. But I think he understood when he took the job, is like, hey, we got to have an influx of talent. You've had the benefit of spring now, and now you're in a fall camp. And so these guys that didn't know each other come January 1, you know, have kind of bonded off the field. And that translates on the field. And so I like what Cody's done. And every time that I'm around him, he's always up. Right? I think being an offensive line coach, I think you have to be up. Because when you mess up on the offensive line, it's a team failure, right? Quarterback gets sacked, running back gets hit for a big loss. You know, maybe the quarterback is hurried and the ball has to come out early and off target. You know, there's a lot to it. And so when you get beat on the offensive line, it's noticeable. You have somebody line up out there, a 7 technique, and just kind of rip and stick and get all the way around there and sack your quarterback, everybody's looking at you because you're on an island. And I think Cody Kennedy's temperament is really good. And people forget, I mean, Cody Kennedy a couple years ago was a Brawls finalist. Then on the next thing you know, they make some changes philosophically, offensively, at Arkansas, bring Dan Enos in. It's like you've got this group that's been recruited to play football a certain way. Well, we're going to change the offense here. And it didn't work. And Dan Enos did a really good job under Belima when he was there. And then he goes to Miami. Things didn't work out with him and Manny. He's back at Arkansas. And this is a guy that has his own way of doing things. But I think some of the offensive line struggles that you saw the last couple of years can be attributed to, number one, Dan Enos' change in philosophy, but number two, some injuries up there. So Cody Kennedy, I expect to have a good group. I expect this group to be probably much better than people anticipate. And I say this all the time, and people think I'm just being a homer, and I'm not, because it doesn't matter who's on top of the list. Anybody can make a list. And all of a sudden, people come out here, and they're basically farming for engagement. Right? There's rage bait out there. There's praise bait. There's folligate, that kind of stuff. There's all this stuff out there. And so do you really think that the people that are tweeting out these graphics, ranking certain personnel groups around the SEC, have seen them play or practice? I mean, honestly, ask yourself that. It's like, oh, well, this guy here, you know, a lot of people follow him, so he must know what he's talking about. It's like, no, they're just farming for engagement. Top 10 offensive lines in the SEC, and they've seen zero snaps of those guys playing. And so a lot of people go out there, and that's what people base their expectations on, is this person said this, and this person's got 100,000 followers, so they must be an expert. Now, they just know how to play the game. And so at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what people think or say. We're going to play a 12-game schedule, and we'll figure it out how things are going to go. Will there be some bumps in the road? Sure. But when I begin to think about the snaps that this group has already played, they hadn't played a lot of snaps together, but they've played a lot of football on the college level, many of them in power conferences. And I think that is going to benefit Mississippi State. It's not like we're having to go out there and just put in first-year guys. They're first-year guys in our uniform, but they're not first-year guys to big-time football. And so I expect this group to be good. How good remains to be seen, but I'm not worried about the offensive line. Not. I'm really not worried about the offense. I like what we've done, and we're going to kind of break down positional groups as we move along here. But I like this group, and I like the energy. Like when we get a chance to visit with them, I like the way they talk about each other, the way they talk about their coach. You know, they're just there seems to be a real team concept within that room, and I think everybody involved in Mississippi State football will benefit from that. Time for today's top 10 list, as always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. You know the place. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Guys, let me tell you this. Let me give you his phone number right now, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. And Blair informed me just last month closed another Boneyard listener loan. Love to hear that, man. Love to hear that our relationship, our friendship with Blair is benefiting so many. We've had several Boneyard listeners that have found out that you can close with Blair. A lot of people out there don't know where to start. It's like, hey, I want to buy a house. I want to buy a condo. Maybe it's a game day condo. Maybe I've just gotten married. Maybe I've just got my first real job, and rather than get on the hamster wheel of renting, I want to put some money in some property. And you don't know where to turn. I'm here to tell you it's Blair Chandler. 23 years of experience in the industry, back-to-back-to-back years, top 1% close ratio in the country. Why is he so successful? Well, it's because he's been there and done it all. He knows how to structure loans that give you the best chance to get approved. He understands what underwriters are looking for. There's a lot of guidelines when it comes to getting a mortgage approved. Blair knows those guidelines like the back of his hand. So I share that with you because it's important information to know. Whether you're just beginning adult life, maybe you're resetting adult life, maybe you're thinking about buying that game day condo and eventually making that your retirement home here in Starkville. Blair can help you with that. Visit him at his website, closetoblair.com, or text or call him today. That number I gave you goes directly to him, not to a call center, a receptionist, or anything like that, directly to him. If he doesn't get right back with you, he'll be back with you shortly. He's one of us. I like to keep business in the family when we can. That's closetoblair.com. Okay. It struck me on my trip to San Antonio that there is a female superstar artist that we have not featured here on the show. And so we're going to do that today. And she's actually a Canadian, not that we should hold that against her. You know, we got Pamela Anderson out of Canada too. You know, so hey, it ain't so bad. Got Shannon Tweed. A lot of, let's say, attractive ladies have made the move from Canada to America and found great success here. Now, Alanis Morissette was originally called Alanis, and she was kind of the Canadian answer to Tiffany. Had dropped a couple albums, Alanis, and then Now Is The Time. They were only available through MCA Canada, and so you can't get them through Apple Music. You can find some of that online on YouTube and things of that nature. And So I share that with you just because of the fact that she wasn't always so angsty. And I say that as a compliment. Because in the beginning, and if you've followed her career, you may have forgotten this, Alanis was the opening act on the Vanilla Ice to the Extreme Tour back in 91. Maybe you didn't know that. Yeah. Can you imagine that pairing now, Alanis Morissette with Vanilla Ice? Nah, it probably didn't make a lot of sense. But it did back then because Alanis kind of did, you know, dance music. She was kind of a Paula Abdul-inspired artist. Her first single was a track called Too Hot. And it's kind of unremarkable, to be honest with you. She didn't really stand out. But, you know, teen girls loved her. Teen guys loved her. Very attractive young lady. One of the things that I read, too, about her in our preparation for this list, if you look at those videos, she looked great. Great. And then she said in later interviews that the initial record company management group, like, hey, you need to lose some weight. And it kind of put her in a bit of a tailspin, you know, made bulimia and an eating disorder and that kind of stuff, you know, part of her regimen. And you hate to see that, right? There's a lot of people in the entertainment industry will tell you that. You got to look a certain way. You got to dress a certain way. It should always be about your talent. I understand image is important, but not at the risk of someone's health, and especially someone like her who got their start on You Can't Do That on Television. Do you remember that show? I used to love it. And I think she probably got slimed, right? You never know. But here are my top 10 songs from the Alanis Morissette catalog. Now, all of these 10 are going to come from Jagged Little Pill and Forward. We're not going to go make you dig and search and research for those Canadian stuff, because I've listened to most of that, and it's just, again, it's very unremarkable. You can hear her talent, but I venture to say that MCA didn't put a lot of money behind her, because, you know, she's playing shopping malls and things like that, and, you know, when you know that you've got a, you know, maybe an organic audience of sort, you know, it's like, hey, this is a teen poppy thing, and we can just kind of go out here and not necessarily put our best studio musicians on this and hope for the best. That's kind of what she got caught up in, the corporate side of music. And then she sat down and she penned a great album called Jagged Little Pill that, if memory serves me correct, has sold over 33 million copies. If that many people are buying the record, you have to say, you know what, maybe her true artistic value was known when she kind of took the reins a bit and became more of an alternative rock. I love the mysterious side of her. She has a very haunting quality to her voice, and there's a great interview with her on Howard Stern, and she kind of talks a little bit about that aspect of it. I don't think she was ever meant to be a pop star. I think she was meant to be kind of an alt-rock performer. So here we go. Number 10 on our list is a very interesting track called Smiling. Maybe you're familiar with that. I think lyrically it's super, super cool. I don't think it's one of the songs till you look at and say, well, you know, this is exactly what I'm looking for. But it's probably a song that you don't know as well just because of, you know, kind of how life is. And you got a little snippet there. But, yeah, it's on the Such Pretty Forks in the Road album. That's what I was looking for. Such Pretty Forks in the Road. And many of you, you know, maybe after those, you know, couple of albums, you know, maybe you healed a little bit and moved on from Alanis Morissette, but there's some things deeper in the catalog that are really good. Reasons I Drink, that's our number 9 song. I am retired from that, but that is a very interesting track too. And I think when you go back and it was a single that she put out there, but the lyrical content on this is super, super cool. That's one of the things that I like some Alanis Morissette stuff. You know, the reasons that I tell everybody I'm fine even though I'm not. These are the reasons I overdo it. I've been working since I can remember, since I was single digits, because she got first discovered at 9 years of age. Now, even though I've been busted, I don't know where to draw the line, because that groove has gotten so deep, and nothing can give reprieve like they do. Nothing can give a break for the soldier like they do. So here we are. I feel such rapture and the comfort is strong. Oh, one more hit. And so in many respects, it kind of tells a little bit of I know, maybe the dark side of fame in some respects. But very interesting track. And number eight, a song you're going to be familiar with. I think the next eight are probably, we could all, if we sat around and all just kind of chewed the fat and had like a little think tank meeting, you know, maybe a meeting of the distinguished ladies and gentlemen, and discussed what we collectively think are the best songs in her catalog, I suspect this is where we would land with these eight. We may disagree on the order, but I think we would agree these are the best ones. Number eight, Head Over Feet. I've always liked it. I thought it's a little bit different than the rest of the album. And there's going to be a lot of Jagged Little Pill on here. But Head Over Feet, you know, it's, you know, it's basically kind of about a young lady that's kind of reluctant to give herself to someone, to commit to a relationship. But when she does, she's all in. There's a lot of us that are like that, too. Number seven, great, great song. And the only reason it's this deep on the list is because there's so many other quality songs ahead of it. But it's Thank You. And I think it is one of her best vocal performances. I don't think there's much question about that. I think most people would say, you know what, she has a voice that has a certain level of purity to it. And this is a big part of that. And this is off the supposed former Infatuation Junkie. And I love the album titles with her. You can tell how intelligent she is. Really, really dig that track. It was a huge hit for her, too. All right, number six. Now, this is one, too, that, again, it's not on the Jagged Little Pill album. It's on Under Rug Swept, which was the follow-up. And, again, it's such an incredibly smart way to make that statement. You know, it's kind of like, hey, this is who I am. I'm done. You know, our relationship is over. And a great track called Hands Clean. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. I'm certain that you are, many of you that were fans of hers. That album debuted at number one. You know, it's like, hey, oh, new material from Alanis Morissette? Oh, yeah, let me go grab this. All right, number five, back to Jagged Little Pill. It's You Learn. Great track, and there's a lot of kind of proverb type stuff in this, right? You live, you learn, right? There's so many things about that, some examples that she draws. I really dig it. It's midway in our list, but I think a lot of people, you know, think about that, you know, kind of that melodic pop beat that goes along with it. And I love the character in her voice on this one. It's like there's just unrestrained quality with her. Really, really love it. All right, number four. And this song at times was a little bit overplayed. And that happens a lot, right? Especially when there's an album that resonates with so many people and they play it to death. And this is one of those songs that it was part of that. It's Hand in My Pocket. You know, because I can see, I've got one hand in my pocket and the other hand is doing this, and the other hand's doing that. The other one's giving a peace sign, whatever. It's a clever song. The writing on it is near genius. And there are a lot of people that don't like Alanis Morissette because it's kind of it's an empowerment thing with women, right? There's a lot of women that really saw Alanis Morissette kind of as their spirit animal in many respects. It's like, hey, she's saying the things that I feel. And that's one of the reasons that album especially was so popular. It's why she has to this day a very dedicated following, because I think she articulates a lot of women's issues in a way that a lot of people can't. And that's the great thing about music, right? Is that you, when you find somebody that is kind of singing your song, you're like, you know what? Hey, I'm going to stick with this. There's so many of those songs and albums out there and artists that for me, kind of tell my story. And there wasn't a lot of female vocalists in that era at the time. And I really think, you know, you remember Lilith Fair? We did a top 10 list about that. I think Alanis kind of paved the way for a lot of that. I think a lot of record companies is like, oh, we can make money on female vocalists that are singer-songwriters. Oh, we can do that. Okay, well, let's throw some money behind those people. You know, and I think in many respects, Alanis Morissette was a pioneer for this generation and really opened up the door to a lot of women's artists. And there was a time in the mid-90s, man, when women kind of ruled radio rock and Alanis was kind of the queen of that group. All right, number three. Now, a lot of people kind of memed this song before memes were kind of a thing, right? We didn't really have social media back then, and we certainly didn't have all these people that, you know, like TikTok has revolutionized the game, you know. But the song is ironic. You know, isn't it ironic? Don't you think? lot of little things, you know, like rain on your wedding day and things. Some of those things are not ironic, because I heard a comedian say one time, there's nothing ironic about that stuff, Alanis. It's all just terrible, right? You know, like a fly on your Chardonnay. But the writing on this is so incredibly exquisite. It's so great how she strings all this stuff together. And I think in many respects, this is one of those songs that really demonstrates the genius of Alanis Morissette. Absolutely. Number two, you know what number one is before I even get there? But I actually like this song better. But it would be sacrilege to put this over what number one is, and you already know, right? But it's a great track called Uninvited. I love the haunting quality of the song. I think it is absolutely beautiful. And the composition behind it, it's just one of those songs you put it on and it's like, what did I just listen to? It's really unlike anything else. It's a song that really stands along. It's from the City of Angels, I think that's right. City of Angels soundtrack, but it is one of those songs that I think really kind of opens up maybe the way a lot of women feel. Does it make sense? There's a lot of that in this, and again, I think it's one of these songs that, you know, it's like, I'm trying not to play this for you, but like anyone would be, I'm flattered by your fascination with me. Like any hot-blooded woman, I have simply wanted an object to crave, but you're not allowed. You're uninvited. An unfortunate slight must be strangely exciting to watch the stoic squirm, must be somewhat heartening to watch the shepherd meet shepherd, but you're not allowed. You're uninvited. It's crazy, right? I mean, it's in many respects, it kind of reminds me of the Sarah McLachlan song Possession. It's like, yeah, I'm very flattered, but you kind of creep me out. And so, you know, like anybody, I'm very flattered that you find me attractive or whatever, but I don't want you to be a part of my life. I'm going to keep you at arm's length in that respect. But it's one of those things I say all the time, you know, of course, you guys know I had four sisters growing up and, you know, mom, stepmom, I had a grandmother and an aunt that kind of raised me until my mom got remarried. And I want people to know, especially on the women's side of things, I don't know how you all navigate life with so many crazy people on social media. Honest to goodness. Like I've got female friends, obviously. And I'm like, they're like, oh my gosh, I just block all those people. And then they create a new identity and they come back and it's like there's just such an unhealthy interaction there, you know. And you know, my girls have dealt with it too. And it's one of those things too. It's like you just absolutely hate it. Because a lot of people out there, there's a lot of really great guys out there. Contrary to what you might believe, there's a lot of great guys out there. I've raised a couple, right? And there are so many women out there these days that would rather just kind of have these artificial relationships with, you know, people that don't really get to know them, just because of the fact that there's so many creeps out there ruining it for the good guys. And that's kind of what that song reminds me of. Number one, though, and you know it before I say it, because in many respects, it is the modern soccer mom's anthem. And for all of you guys out there that inspired those women to take up arms, shame on you. It's you ought to know. And I remember how provocative the song was. It's like, a lot of people were like, hey, I've never heard a woman speak like this. I've heard a lot of women speak like that. But I think for a lot of people, a lot of women out there that were kind of put in a box, and it's like, hey, this is how you're supposed to act, this is how you're supposed to look, and this is supposed to how your sexuality is supposed to go, and we're going to put you in a box, and if you don't like that box, then we're going to talk poorly of you. And I think this song just kind of comes out and talks in a very honest way that made a lot of people uncomfortable. And I'll be honest with you, I wasn't a huge fan of the song, and it really wasn't so much the song as it was the reaction from some people. It made me uncomfortable, even though I have never mistreated a girlfriend or a significant other in my life the way that this song details. But clearly, and I think that's the thing you've got to look about. Like one of the things that I tell my team over at Jeans Page, it's like if somebody comes out and says, hey, why aren't we having more of this? You know, rather than get your feelings hurt, give the people what they want, right? If somebody says, hey, we're not getting enough football recruiting stuff, then we need to write more football recruiting stuff. Instead of getting defensive and saying, hey, if you don't like it, you can just leave, right? Now, we have to be receptive to our customers. And, of course, this situation, like when you hear this, when you hear you ought to know, as a man, if you're a gentleman, I think you hear that really as a cautionary tale. It's like, hey, I never want a girl singing this song and thinking about me. So you treat them with dignity and respect. And, of course, she was also involved with somebody that, had somebody else. But my point being is that when you are getting feedback like this, you need to take it to heart and be a better person. There's a reason that 33 million people, mainly women, went out and bought this record. It's because it told their story. Absolutely. And the fact that we haven't done her yet, I think, was a bit of a disservice. But it kind of struck me today. You know, we hadn't done this. I was going to let Dana do this list some time ago. But, when I hear her sing this song, be honest with you, it makes me uncomfortable. It does. It makes me uncomfortable. And I think that's great art. Great art elicits emotion from the reader or the listener or the viewer. Absolutely reasoning behind every bit of that. And so when you hear that song, if it makes you uncomfortable, it's probably a good thing. Because it means you're actually receptive to it. There are people like, oh, it's just a stupid song out there. Well, that's because that song's about you, right? And the whole thing was, like they said it was Dave Collier from Full House. And then she came out later and said, no, this song's not about him. I think it probably was, but I think it's one of those things where she wants to kind of keep some mystery with everybody that, and she deserves to be able to do that. But that's your top 10 list for today. Hope that you ladies enjoy it, and I hope that you men take it to heart. It's true. You know that it's true. But, so our shout-out to the ladies of that grew up in the 90s, and I can assure you there's a new generation of ladies right now that will be singing a song with their moms when they're riding around going to Starbucks. Hey, let's go get some, let's go get brunch, and we'll listen to Alanis Morissette on the way. It's because of the fact, great songs never age. Great messages in songs never age, and I think probably the song You Ought to Know from Alanis Morissette is probably more relevant today than when it came out, as great as it was. So there you are. Ladies, you've had your day today, and hope that you guys enjoyed the list. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out and let us know. Best way to do that is to hit us up on social media. Roy Simonte is the keeper and distributor of the list. He is my friend. And you can find him on Twitter and Spotify, where they house our great top 10 list, under the handle Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And I'm on all forms of social media, at Scout Steve R. So be sure and check it out. And again, let us know. And I've had a big run here the last few days about top 10 suggestions. So we'll get to some of that. Of course, Roy and I had a little competition, and some of you guys let me down. I'm just going to kind of lay it out there. Just going to lay it out there. You can't let me down. Supertramp, I think, was superior to Noah Kane or Khan, whatever it is. But Roy wins the competition. So we'll do that again at some point. So right now, it's Roy 1, Steve 0. Roy 1, Steve 0. And, of course, a lot of younger people out there on social media. There's a lot of people that have got Breakfast in America on original vinyl that aren't even on social media. But nevertheless, he wins. I'm not going to sit here and cry about it, but we will do it again sometime soon. We'll have the face-off, the Roy and Steve face-off, and probably what we do, because I thought about this, even though Supertramp came out first, is we probably tweet them out the same day. Does it make sense? Because I don't want to beat Roy and Roy come back later and say I beat him on a technicality. I want it to be completely fair. And again, Roy likes music that I like and likes other things that I don't like, and I can tell you there's some obscure 80s bands that if we ever had a Name That Tune contest when it came to 80s rock and roll, I would leave Roy whimpering in a corner somewhere. It's true. So don't game me, Roy. Don't game me. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You will too if you don't already. You may already have a raging love affair with the fine folks at Campus Bookmart because they do such a wonderful job supplying this great fan base with the latest in Mississippi State merchandise. Whether you're looking to update your wardrobe, and chances are you need to, yeah, let's go ahead and be fair about this, right? If you're still rocking that maroon is all that matters shirt, it's time to update the wardrobe. It's put that, you know, whether it be in Goodwill or whatever, a back drawer somewhere, maybe you want to keep all those shirts. I keep all my Mississippi State shirts, even though I don't wear them, so I get it. I don't always wear them, though. I don't always wear them, but nevertheless, chances are you need new Mississippi State clothing. You can find it at Campus Bookmart. Whether you're looking for game day apparel, whether you're looking for housewarming gift, wedding gift, graduation gift, you can find it there. Chances are, when you walk in that store, you're going to want to buy them out. It's easy to spend a lot of money there. I've got a new project, too. I got to propose to Miss Kathy Brown. Maybe she'll hear this and say, "Steve, you were talking about me on the show." I may run down there Monday and talk to her. I've got a great idea that I think would be great for both of us and for you, too. If you can't make it to town or see their smiling faces and peruse their fine selections of Mississippi State merch, visit them on the World Wide Web. I know you want to support a Stargirl business, and as you should, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. We continue our opponent previews, and today's show brings us to Arkansas. Now, you guys will know, listen, I'm a Sam Pittman fan. I like Sam Pittman. I thought the hire was questionable, and he's kind of proven me to be right. But you know, one thing I'll say about the Razorbacks, that even though they have not been overly talented the last couple of years, and maybe that says a lot about Sam Pittman's recruiting, those kids play hard for Sam Pittman. Now, last year was a little different scenario. Things kind of got away from them. And so I share this with you because of the fact that there's a lot to kind of understand about what's happening in Fayetteville. Now, you know, last year at the end of the year, everybody wanted Sam Pittman gone. They elected to give him one more year and turn this thing around. A lot of kids hit the portal. We'll talk about that shortly. But a 4-8 year last year, 1-7, and there's some people, of course, up in the great northwest Arkansas area that think they should never lose to Mississippi State in anything. We have done a really good job against Arkansas over the years in football. I don't know if you guys have kept up with us at all. And you should have, because you know, so even this year, they pick Arkansas to finish ahead of Mississippi State in the SEC standings. I don't know if you've paid attention to this, but the last decade has not been good for Arkansas. You go all the way back to 2012, State wins in 12, 13, 14, 15. Dak Prescott never lost a game to them. We lose to them in 2016 when we were suffering with a severe case of sermonitis. And then we reel off wins in 17, 18, and 19. So that's 7 of 8. They beat us in 20, that crazy game that we should have won. We gave it away. It's true. KJ Costello couldn't read defenses, and we lose 21-14. We still had two drives that got inside the 20. They got us nothing. Of course, Greg Brooks had a big pick six early on. And then 2021, we lose by a field goal in a game that we missed three field goals. And they said it was their Super Bowl. We bounced back in 2022 and beat them 40-17. And then last year, in a snooze fest, and I remember walking out of Razorback Stadium telling Dana, "I am so glad we won today." We didn't play well offensively. We were elite defensively. Win the game 7-3. So you start thinking, since 2012, Arkansas has defeated Mississippi State three times. Let that sink in for a second. So 9 of the last 12 games, Mississippi State has won. But for some reason, every year, the SEC media picks Arkansas over Mississippi State. Some people forecasting that Arkansas is going to come to Starkville and win that game this year. Yeah, I don't see it, Chief. All right, so last year, the Razorbacks go 4-8. They get off to a good start. They knock off Western Carolina 56-13 and end up losing Rocket. And that was tough. I mean, to be fair, that's tough. Anybody that loses a running back of that caliber, you're going to feel it. They get Kent State 28-6 the next week. Wasn't a great showing. They kind of handled them late, you know. They kind of put them away in the second half, but not a great showing. But you think, hey, 2 weeks into this thing, we've lost Rocket. We figured out a win. They lose in Fayetteville the next week to BYU. I don't know that Arkansas wants to play BYU again. I don't know if they do. I don't know how we've played them and actually had some success, and we've had a couple of games where I think officiating determined the outcome of the games against BYU. Everybody remembers 2001. We got cheated. We did. And then we go up there and had them beat. And then Will Coleman gets called for contact to the head of a quarterback that couldn't have thrown a completion if you let him throw against air. But I digress. They go to LSU, number 12 LSU, and LSU pulls out a win there, 34-31. And so you look back and say, hey, they're 2-2, but their two losses are against Power 5 opponents, all within a score. And then they go to Arlington, and I've shared with you guys when we did our A&M preview, I love this Arkansas A&M game at Arlington. I love it. I watch it every year. And if they're playing the same time we are, I DVR it just because of the fact I just never know what's going to happen in this game. There's something crazy always happens in this game. It's like the Georgia-Auburn game. It's one of those SEC games I just simply have to watch. Well, last year the Aggies, as bad as they were, beat Arkansas 34-22. So the losing streak now 3 weeks in a row. They go to Ole Miss, and for some reason Ole Miss and Arkansas have played some very competitive games. Ole Miss gets this one. Of course, we were cheering hard for the Razorbacks. We were. Didn't work out the way we wanted. But, Ole Miss gets the dub there. But, Arkansas, it's interesting. They always seem to get up to play Ole Miss. For some reason or another, they always get up to play Ole Miss. And let's see, what did they win? It was a stretch. They won 4 in a row. Like from 14 on. 14, 15, 16, 17, they win those four against Ole Miss, then drop two, so that makes it 4 of 6. They win in Fayetteville in 2020, which makes it 5 of 7. And then 5 of 8, 6 of 9, 6 of 10. So that's how it plays out. But, for some reason they get to play those guys. But, again, Ole Miss gets the dub. Losing streak is extended. The next week they got to go to Tuscaloosa and play Alabama. And again, it's a tight ball game. They lose 24-21. And listen, Alabama ended up kind of coming on strong last year, but I think we all agree it wasn't one of Nick Saban's best teams. And then some craziness happens. 5-game losing streak. They host Mississippi State, and they were so cocky that week. I remember breaking down those interviews and transcribing them. They thought that we were just going to show up there. They were just so happy to be home because they hadn't played a home game since September the 16th. So it had been over a month. It was like, hey, we'll be back in front of our home crowd. And the only score they got in the ball game came after a pick early in the game that set up a field goal. And it was a win for us to hold them to a field goal. I don't know if you guys remember that. And late in the game, obviously, there was a scoop and score that was negated by a motion penalty or a false start penalty. Proved to be the difference in the game. State wins that game 7-3. It was far from an offensive masterpiece. But if you go back and remember this, KJ Jefferson played in the game. They ran for 103 yards, and that's kind of their bread and butter. KJ 38. KJ kind of put him on his back a little bit and said, let's go try to win a game. He goes 19 of 31 with a pick. 97 yards and was sacked 4 times. Your defense was elite that day. And we get a win. It wasn't pretty, but we got a win. The next week, they got to go to Florida. And, of course, they fired Dan Enos after our game and went to Florida to take on a struggling Billy Napier squad. And they win in overtime 39-36. So the losing streak ends. And they think, okay, we've still got a chance to get bowl eligible. We can still figure this thing out. We can find a way to get into a bowl game and salvage something from this year. And then Auburn goes in there and beats Arkansas to death, 48-10. One of the best days for Hugh Freeze's offense on the Plains. you know, against an Auburn team, against an Arkansas team that, again, had been very competitive. They got absolutely shelled in this ballgame. They bounced back to beat Florida International, the Panthers, 44-10. And, of course, at this point, you know, you're not going to get bowl eligible. And then they played number 10 Missouri in Fayetteville and got beat 48-14. And people were out in the streets demanding a coaching change. Didn't work out. Initially, all the Arkansas media was like, hey, he's out. They're gonna hire this guy. You know, Urban Meyer's coming. Stu Spurrier's coming together. It's going to be amazing. They stuck with Sam Pittman. And a lot of it's because, you know, that game against Florida International, of course, put him over the threshold where his buyout was higher because he had a winning record overall. So this year, this is it. There's who's got a hotter seat, Sam Pittman or Billy Napier? I would say Napier just because I think people have already accepted the fact that Arkansas is not going to be very good this year. And again, they picked one spot ahead of us. Again, which means the SEC media hadn't done their homework and think they're going to come in here and beat us in Starkville. I don't see it. They open up on Thursday, August the 29th in 19 days. Can you believe that, kids? 19 days. We play football in 3 weeks. 19 days. Arkansas Pine Bluff comes in. That's a dub. All right, that's a dub. The next week, they have to go to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State. That's a loss. Okay, that's to take a team like that on the road to win a game, it's going to be tough. It'll be rocking there in Stillwater. The Pokes will be ready. They'll win. 11 a.m. kick. So, well, that's got them 1-1. They get UAB in Fayetteville. And I'm not ready to just call this an Arkansas win, but I expect it to be a win. You say, Steve, it's UAB. Yeah, I know. I know. The next week, they go to Auburn. All right, so let's give them the win against UAB. 2-1. You got to go to Auburn. And I don't think Auburn's going to be great. I think they're going to be better than Arkansas. And I think that they're going to get a dub. And again, it's so hard to win on the road in this league, especially when you're a team that's expected to lose. I mean, it's like, well, they've had one road win last couple years. I think that's right. All right, so that makes them 2-2. Then you get, again, the champagne of Arkansas games in Arlington against A&M. I don't know how good A&M is going to be this year. I think they're going to be, they'll be a winning team. It's a big game for Sam Pittman. If they lose this game and they're 2-3 heading into the month of October, you might see Sam Pittman fired then. Could you, I mean, honestly, could you bet against that? I don't think you could. I expect them to lose the game. We'll go 2-3. But again, anything can happen in that game. Then Tennessee comes to Fayetteville. That's a loss. Now you're 2-4. LSU comes to Fayetteville. That's a loss. 2-5. Then you limp in to Davis Wade Stadium to play Mississippi State. That's a loss. 2-6. Ole Miss goes to Fayetteville, and again, I think they'll get up and try to play, but I think Ole Miss is simply going to be that much better than him. 2-7. Texas, you think they're beating Texas? No. 2-8. Louisiana Tech comes in for Military Appreciation Day and Senior Day. Maybe you pull out a win there. Maybe. Makes you 3-8, and then you got Missouri. At Missouri, you're 3-9. They're staring 3-9 right in the face. Now, could they win one of these two toss-up games along the way? Possibly. They could beat A&M. And you know, you say, hey, I don't know what Mississippi State's going to look like at that point. But I feel fairly confident that Mississippi State's a better team than Arkansas. And Arkansas defensively has not been what they should be. I think this Arkansas team is in a world of trouble. And I think it's evident to everybody that they're going to make a coaching change. And there's some Arkansas fans out there. And I got some friends that are Arkansas fans. And they're just kind of, they kind of know what the reality of it is, but you're just kind of hoping, let's just deal with it week to week, right? Week to week, and who are we going to get? I think when it's all said and done, Arkansas will be the first team in the Southeastern Conference to fire their coach. Just don't know when it happens. And I know they're ready to win up there. So they'll get out the checkbook. But, you know, it's like this is the same bunch that hired Sam Pittman in the first place. Those are the things that I look at and it just kind of – it's interesting to me, you know, like number one, you thought you're going to go out and make a great hire, and you hired Sam Pittman, who is a great guy. I'm a Sam Pittman fan. I love watching his press conferences. I think even though he talks a little trash every now and again, I think he is a very genuine guy. I think that's fair. And he's a guy that obviously had an opportunity to do some big things at Arkansas. It hadn't worked out. He is 23-25 overall as a head coach. I don't know if you knew that. True story, 23-25. So let's look at his record here at Arkansas. He had a couple years as the head coach at Hutch. Did you know that? Back in 92 and 93, went 11-9-1 as a head coach. And then he comes to Arkansas, and he's 23-25. So, again, I don't remember the actual language in that contract, but there's something about that buyout, you know. I don't know. But 23-25 in 4 years, 11-23 in the Southeastern Conference. And so you start kind of figuring this thing out here. Okay, so they had three bowl trips. They go to the Texas Bowl in 2020 and end up having to opt out. So everybody went that year, right? They were supposed to play in the Texas Bowl. Game didn't take place. They win the Outback in 21 and finish 9-4 and rank in the top 20. And everybody thought, okay, well, we're good. We got KJ, we got Rocket back. 22 is going to be good. They go 7-6. But they win Liberty Bowl to put together a winning record. And then last year you go 4-8. And I think, again, what has happened in my estimation, the portal has been a very negative thing for Arkansas. You've had a lot of guys go in there that have done some good things, and then they get out of there. And they remember the whole secondary transferred out a couple years ago, you know. And so, and a lot of people complained about that. So I'm exactly sure what's happening here. But let's kind of look here at the transfer portal, if we can, you know, for last year. And you know we can. We got the technology to get there. All right, so let's see here. Let's see. Everybody's got a lot of stuff out there, right? There's a lot of stuff out there. And so the portal for – we're going to just look at 2024. So last year at the end of the season – and not all these guys are scholarship guys, but they had 30 guys leave the program. 30. That's a lot. R.J. Johnson, the cornerback, was one of them. Dominique Johnson, a running back, was one of them. We know him. Lorando Johnson, another corner, left. Paris Patterson, an interior lineman with the SMU. Max Fletcher was the guy, the punter. Guy's really good. Headed to Cincinnati. Let's see here. Andrew Chamblay, an offensive lineman, SMU. Jacoby Criswell, quarterback. We recruited him, you may recall. He's in North Carolina now. Running back Isaiah Augustave, now Colorado. Tight end Francis Sherman to Cincinnati. Ladarius Bishop, remember him? You remember Ladarius Bishop? He was a Mississippi State commitment. They make a coaching change up there, get rid of Chad Morris, and then he flips to Arkansas. And he's had some good moments up there, but now he's at UNLV. Jaheim Thomas, linebacker, leaves, headed to Wisconsin. KJ Jefferson, of course, the big name there, leaves and heads down to Central Florida. I'm eager to see what Gus Malzahn can do with KJ. Very interested to see how that plays out. He had a handful of guys go to UNLV, of course. It's, you know, Barry Odom is there, you know, so it makes sense. Some of those guys that they recruited or he's familiar with went to Ole Miss. Chris Paul, a junior linebacker, went to Ole Miss. But, again, a lot of these guys headed to UNLV, headed to Colorado. You know, obviously some connections there. But you look at the guys coming in. Bryce Stevens was a guy, as a wide receiver, that went in the portal and pulled out on him, elected to stay. But 30 outgoing players and then 22 coming in. But if you look at this, there doesn't seem to be a lot of impact transfers. Jaquindon Jackson from Utah is expected to be a guy in their offense. They probably need him to do some good things. Jordan Anthony, wide receiver, speedster kid from A&M, went to Arkansas. But not a lot of other guys out here you look at and say, hey, these guys, you know, should be difference makers. And that's kind of what happens. You know, when you're losing, you don't get the prize transfer. Not to mention when you begin to think about the NIL standpoint of it is who's going to say, okay, yeah, let's go throw a bunch of money behind, you know, a lame duck coach. It just doesn't work that way. But it's going to be a new look team. You know, we'll see how things progress with them. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a tough year. And I think before the year is over, they will make a coaching change. And I think there'll probably be some people involved with Arkansas football. They're like, you know, let's not wait. Let's go ahead and get this thing done now. So, yeah, I expect Mississippi State to win this game. Of course, we'll revisit the topic as we get closer to game week. But, again, I like the way where it lays on the schedule. Because I think, number one, they're going to be out of it by that time. But it's kind of a trap game, kind of where we are, right? And so we talked about they'll probably be in a losing streak. And again, they host LSU. So you got Tennessee, an open date. You host LSU. You travel to Mississippi State. And then you host Ole Miss. So that all kind of lays in there together. I think it's a trap game for them, if there is such a thing for a team that's projected to have a losing season. But I like where we are on the schedule, even with that open date coming 2 weeks prior to our matchup. I think State wins this game, and I really don't think it's going to end up being close. That's how I see it. Maybe you see it differently. But I think when you look at this roster and you begin to think about, you know, kind of, you know, look at the production that they're losing from last year, it's pretty amazing, really. It's one of those deals you kind of break it down. It's like this is going to be a team that is really kind of unrecognizable in many respects. Because let's be honest, I mean, you know, KJ's kind of been their identity. I think we all kind of see that for what it is. But, you know, when you start running through these the names, I mean, this year it's going to be a completely different roster in that respect. Much different deal. You know, I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is, you know. But you think about KJ. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, what could he be in the Gus Malzahn offense? I think Gus will know how to use him better than the folks at Arkansas did. I think KJ will have a big year this year. Now, decision-making hadn't always been his strong suit. I thought he did a much better job last year kind of protecting the football, not taking quite as many chances with it. But, you know, if you're Arkansas and you're, you know, trying to figure this thing out, you know, it's tough, man. It is. All right, let's finish up. Last segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're bringing a large group of folks to the Golden Triangle, there's no better place to stay than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Kind of neatly tucked away in a pretty quiet area out there so you can have some peace and quiet, you know. You can have some privacy. We don't need you throwing a rager out there, but you can go out there and enjoy some time with the friends and family. Whether it be a staycation or perhaps a chance to get everybody together for a ballgame weekend, maybe you're bringing a work group to town. Rather than go out and get five hotel rooms, you'd be better off saving a little money and have everybody under one roof. How fun would that be? Grandma can make those cinnamon rolls for you. Full-service kitchen. Go out and buy some groceries and you can cook at home. You put some steaks on the grill. That great wet bar, that fabulous back porch area, nice place to sit and enjoy an adult beverage and watch the sunset. That fire pit area out back, every conversation's more profound when it's around the fire. I don't make the rules, I'm just here to enforce them. If you're looking to bring a large group to Starkville, this is the place to stay. The renovated clubhouse of the old country club, very easy to find off Highway 182. An amazing place. I've been there, some friends of mine have stayed there. It's absolutely a winning decision. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page is going to auto-populate. You can peruse through the fine amenities that are available to you there. Also, some booking options will come up. Airbnb, VRBO, you're welcome to go that route. But if you want to save some money, I can help you do that through the Evolve website. Book through Evolve and use promo code BSR10. BSR10 gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. We're making it even more affordable to come to Starkville and enjoy the Mississippi State Bulldogs. So whether it's a ball game weekend, couples weekend, friends weekend, college roommate weekend, I don't know your needs, but I know they can be met at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and check them out today. Okay, last time we were together, Iva Arcat was making his decision. As I've shared with you guys before, Oregon State was believed to be the team to beat heading into the visits. He visited Mississippi State. Our Oregon State media partners shared publicly and privately they didn't expect it to be Oregon State. I got a message at like 12:17 in the morning, our time, which is about 10:17 their time, the day before I flew out to San Antonio, Wednesday morning, that Oregon State was going to make another run at things, and ultimately they get him. Now, here's the thing. A lot of people, of course, are very angsty about this. We're going to have a good club next year anyway. I think having Arquette lineup would have made us a great club. I think we would transition from a team that's capable of making Omaha to a team that's expected to make Omaha, but it didn't work out. But what's interesting to me, there are people right now that are up in arms about this, and 3 weeks ago you didn't even know his name. You know, it was basically a luxury-type pick. It didn't work out for us. And listen, hey, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses. You know, this is three portal classes in a row that we've had a chance to get a marquee player and haven't been able to get it done. And that doesn't match our expectations for the program. We think, hey, Mississippi State baseball is amazing. We know that our facility is, our fan support is. We think we should be able to get those players, and we didn't. And so now we move forward. And so based on what I'm hearing, I think we are done in the portal. There was some discussion late last week that we may take a swing at an outfielder. I think basically what we're going to do now is probably play a little more offensive. And maybe Bryce Chance plays some center field. Maybe Nolan Stevens plays some center field. Maybe Ace Reese plays some center field. We'll flesh all that out in fall baseball. I think now, you know, hey, guys are here, you know. And the thing that I think about with every bit of that is like, oh, we can go back in the portal and get a center fielder. We absolutely can. But I wonder about the quality of player that's still available at this late juncture. Is it better than what you already have? I mean, is there going to be a guy out there better than Michael O'Brien remaining in the portal? I would say probably not. Michael O'Brien had a good summer for us. He was already an elite defender. You know, last year they put him in the outfield late in ball games as a defensive replacement. But offensively, you know, he's a freshman. That's one thing. So we had a discussion earlier on the GenesPage.com message board. You know, people are like, hey, you know, Cup and Pulliam only did this, but I looked it up. They only had 41 starts between them in 63 games. And Cup, of course, really was starting to see the baseball well before he got hurt. And his average had jumped from like 186 to 250. So he was up, 64 points, you know. So I like our portal class. And I know when it ends the way that it does, it reminds me of these great, you know, even Dan Mullen football classes. Like, we go out there and do great all summer, and then if we don't get the big signing day splash, people feel a little bit unfulfilled. It doesn't negate what we've done in the portal. Getting Ace Reese was a big deal. Getting Jacob Pruitt was a big deal. Getting Reed Stallman was a good deal. You know, and so you start working through that, and I think it's important to not be a prisoner of the moment, and you go back and take a full inventory. You go back and realize, okay, all right, yeah. When we left Charlottesville, Virginia, we were terrified about this lineup and what the potential could be. And we said we had to hit the portal hard. We did. And we didn't get that marquee player, Iva Arquette, who ended up, according to Baseball America, the top transfer in the portal. And I wish we would have, but we didn't. And now it's time to move forward. But the fact that we didn't get him doesn't erase the fact that we have had a good offseason. Sometimes people forget that. We go through the draft and bring our recruiting class to campus minus just two players. We had six guys that were in the mix to potentially be drafted and signed, and only two did. Of course, you lose Dave Marchand, and that's really where a lot of this comes from, right? Iva Arquette is second baseman by trade, not a shortstop. He's a middle infielder, but he's better at second, and that's primarily what he played at Washington. And so I began to run through all this, and I began to realize, too, that all of a sudden, you know, you have the draft. You're feeling great about the draft, and all of a sudden Travis Smith goes in the 15th and Marchand in the 18th, and now you see Dave Marchand's starting in AA. Of course, that was part of the deal. And give the Angels credit for getting the deal done. You know, you end up getting money comparable to what he hoped to get, and then he had the opportunity to start at AA, and, of course, his first professional hit, he lays down a bunt. Happy for David. But it's like when you begin to think about that, hey, we get into the deadline day, we lose Travis Smith, we lose him, and then we lose Ivar Cat. So it's kind of like we end the summer on a downstroke, and that's fair. And that's the reality of the situation. We hoped that Travis Smith would come to school. He was basically kind of a, kind of an insurance policy in case Pico Cone went pro. And Pico was the guy that got some calls. Talked to Pico myself. He turned down some deals to come back. And he'll have a full year with Justin Parker. He still has another year of leverage to work with. And so we expect big things from him. And, of course, Jacob Pruitt's a guy we expect to be a weekend starter too. And so we've got the pieces. I would love to have a little more experience on the weekends, as you would as well. And, you know, I'd love to have one more bat. But when I begin to work through all this, it's like, hey, well, where's Sawyer Reeves going to play? Well, you know, maybe he's a prospect at second base. I think Dylan Cup is your shortstop. You know, is Ace Reese your third baseman? Garrick Fry your third baseman? Is Ace Reese go to the outfield? We've got enough offensive pieces to put together a lineup. Of course, you'd love to have a center of the order guy like Arquette, but let's not forget the fact that Hunter Hines is returning. And so this is going to be a lineup that I expect to be offensive. And Justin Parker has my absolute trust. If Justin Parker feels like that we're good, then we're good. And I'm not going to sit here and second-guess that guy, because there were some times last year I expected some improvement, but I think we would all agree we got more improvement than we expected. It was a very rare situation that we had a poor pitching performance, even with the bullpen. And that's made up of guys that really struggled in 2023. You know, Tyler Davis being one. I mean, we don't need to go back and document and rehash all that. We all saw it. And so I think when you think about what's returning from this roster on the pitching side and what we're adding to the pitching side, I think the floor is much higher as well as the ceiling. I mean, hey, if we find a guy that's going to be what Cal Steven was for us last year, I mean, goodness gracious, right? But I think Justin Parker will do a great job with these guys. So I'm not worried about it. I'm ready to get on the field and see this team as fall. And, of course, fall ball probably starts late September, early October. Don't have an absolute date on that yet. But I'm sure it'll be after the Hardy concert, because you don't want to do that and then all of a sudden you got to go out there and work on the field, right? Want to make sure we've got playable conditions out there. But I'm excited about the team. I think you guys should be as well. And, yes, the summer ends on a sour note, but again, it does not negate the fact that we had a really good portal class. All that understood, it's time to kind of shift directly into football coverage, you know, and we're bringing you that again. You know, most of it's free over jeanspage.com, any big room stuff it is. But I'm excited to kind of give baseball a break for a little bit. You know, I think I probably wore Chris Lemonis out a little bit here in the last, couple months, you know, just trying to kind of keep up with what's going on. You know, with the draft and all that kind of stuff, you know, I think everybody just kind of needs a break, and then we'll see how things look this fall. And goodness, I mean, you begin to think about this, you know, we're 6 months away from playing baseball. Yeah. And so we'll have plenty of time to get these guys in. Most everybody moved in this weekend, and then they'll start classes. And many of the guys that weren't already with us in the summer will now join the workouts. And I like to make it with the team. I do. I think we got a big year in front of us. That's my opinion as of today. I think it's important to always understand that it's not going to be an old league this year. And we're going to be one of the older teams in the league because of the portal guys that we brought in and some of the guys that we're returning back. And old wins in college baseball. So I expect to win. We won 40 games last year. I expect to exceed that this year. I do think we'll be in the hosting conversation when the NCAA tournament field is announced. You know, we've got to stay healthy. You know, that's always the caveat, right? We have to stay healthy, but I think we have the depth on the offensive side and a lot of guys that have played a lot of baseball that will come in here. And, how many times did you guys cheer for Colton Ledbetter when he was at Samford, right? Now you look back and say, hey, guy was a big part of things for us. And so we hit the portal harder this year than we have in since – its inception. And so now we'll see if we can put this team together on the field and get on the road to Omaha. That's what you want, right? I mean, at the end of the day, even when people are negative, and we deal with this a lot, I understand that every bit of that comes from a good place. There are some people, of course, that have made it personal, right? We get so frustrated at times we don't know how to articulate our feelings properly, and so we just kind of lash out. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're a a sunshine pumper or a doomsday disciple, everybody wants Mississippi State to win. And that's the cure to everything. If you win, people love you. If you don't, they don't. Simple as that. It's incredible how that works. You know, you're hired to win ball games. When you win them, people say, hey, okay, great. Happy with the direction we're going. When you lose, people are going to be vocal about it. And you know, a lot of people don't like that. But that's the reality of life. Just because now there's a vehicle for people to express their disappointment, I don't think it always says everything about their character or their allegiance to our university. I know a lot of people do. It's like, hey, I don't like this negative people. You know, sometimes negativity is reality. When things aren't going well, people are going to respond in a way that some people deem as negative. The best way to get those people quiet, win ball games. Simple as that. And I think we're going to win a lot of them this year. But we'll be back with you on Monday. We'll be back on schedule next week. And so on Sunday, we'll have the first scrimmage. And so I will share with you what we learned from Jeff Levy on Monday show. And I'll try to get that for you earlier. Of course, we don't even have the schedule for our media opportunities, and it's very difficult when you know, we get to watch practice at 9, and we have interviews at 11:15, and you got to put the videos up. So the day gets away from you pretty quickly. So I will do my best to get that show up as early for you as we possibly can on Monday. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.